Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
I want you all to listen up. This is important stuff, all right?
Okay. Here we go.
The Bald-Faced Truth.
Call 503-417-7575 or 877-733-0750 or text to 64636.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a Bald-Faced Truth.
I love having our next guest on the show, in part because he falls into the sweet spot of athletes in the time that I really, as a kid, followed baseball. I know he's not going to want to hear that, but Dale Murphy, 18-year baseball career. You remember him probably with the Atlanta Braves, who played for two other teams. And here was a guy that is a seven-time All-Star, two-time MVP of the league, in the National League, four-time Silver Slugger, and a five-time Gold Glover. Did it all. He joins us now. How are you?
Great. Thank you. Thanks for that intro. Thank you.
You fall in that sweet spot because when you broke into the league, you're not going to want to hear this, but I was six, okay?
By the time
you're done, I'm 23. So, I mean, I watched you in those years where you were the MVP in 82 and 83. I'm 12 and 13. I mean, I was a Giants fan. I hated you for it, but you were like killing it, you know?
Well, thank you. Well, yeah, I know. Where's the time gone? I think about the time that I've been done, and this is my 24th year of retirement. So then I start adding up the numbers of those MVP years and how long ago that was. It's crazy, but it's good memories.
Do you still dream baseball? Do you have baseball dreams?
I think those are out of my system. I did have them for a while after I retired. The weirdest dreams, like I was always late for the game. You know what I mean? It was like, hey, you know, you need to go in, but I couldn't, you know, either I couldn't find my keys to the car or I couldn't find my glove. And, you know, that was my subconscious telling me, you're never going back. You're never going to make it back. You know, I think eventually you really miss it. I mean, I always miss it, but I mean, especially the first few years after retirement, but I think I finally talked myself into it that it's never going to happen again.
When you get to the big leagues in 1976, you're 20. You become an All-Star at age 24. Did you consider making it, getting it to the big leagues, or making an All-Star game, or winning an MVP, or did you ever have that moment where you go, "I've arrived"?
Well, my first All-Star game, no, you know, you're just, let me see, 1980, I think when you get a little comfortable thinking, you know, I've figured this out, you know, and that I have arrived, I think probably about after my fourth or fifth year, and obviously after I won an MVP, you're like, you know, okay, this is pretty big stuff here. But I tried to use it to motivate me to keep me going instead of, you know, just to. I don't think the tendency of most competitive athletes is to relax any, but you know what I mean.
You
can tend to think, well, I figured this out, and so I. It was kind of, you get kind of nervous. It's like, well, what am I going to do next year? I mean, are things going to work out this well next year? So there's probably with a lot of athletes, even at the highest levels, there's probably a lot more self-doubt than people would realize. at least that was my case. I was always never comfortable that, okay, I figured this out, that it's, you know, I can dial it in every year. You feel like you're on the verge of, going into a 2-week slump, and then you kind of figure, you forgot how to hit. That's not a comfortable feeling. So I think there's probably, there's just a fine line between really, at least for me, between really being in the groove and just going out playing and not thinking, being in the zone, I guess you want to call it, and, wondering if you're going to get a hit tonight. I think there's probably a little more self-doubt than people would understand and appreciate for guys playing in the major leagues.
We're talking to Dale Murphy, former 7-time Major League All-Star. The All-Star game happens last night. What are your memories from those 7 All-Star games? You had 7 in 8 seasons.
Well, obviously my first one in Dodger Stadium, and a lot of the guys I watched, while I was in high school were there. Pete Rose, Johnny Bench, a lot of the Big Red Machine were there, Joe Morgan, and just the veterans guys. I think that's one of the interesting things I thought of the other day, was that this All-Star teams now, these guys are so young. Mostly the teams I was a part of were veteran teams. I mean, it speaks well for the talent level of the young guys in Major League Baseball. They're predominantly young players. But I'd have to say one of the most interesting memories is Pete Rose walking by me in my first one and said, "Hey, good luck tonight. And if you get in, don't do anything, you wouldn't do during the regular season." In other words, yeah, it's an All-Star game, but we're here to win, play hard.
And I look at I'm looking at that box score from that game. It was a 4-2 win, 56,000 at Dodger Stadium. You had the guys in that lineup, like from Dave Parker to Johnny Bench and J.R. Richard on the mound. I mean, J.R. Richard, we've had him on the show. J.R. Richard just threw 100 miles an hour, and people got out of the way.
Well, I'm not sure of the starting time of that game. Even if it was a regular 7:30 game, I think there was a few shadows at the beginning, and Johnny Bench was catching JR. I don't think anybody's going to touch a ball off of JR. You got to remember those late 70s years and early 80s. Of course, that was 1980. JR was on top of his game, and he was people always ask me, toughest pitcher to hit. I go, that few years there, JR was just about impossible. It struck out well over 300. So, we had a good staff, obviously. And, I'm very thankful. I think it was Chuck Tanner was managing, and he didn't have to get me in. I mean, back then, not everybody played. It was, they didn't try and get you in to the game, but he got me in actually ahead of, I can't remember who it might have been, Jose Cruz, and I played a couple innings, got in at bat, so it was a thrill.
We're talking to Dale Murphy. In that game, Ken Griffey hits a home run in the 5th inning off Tommy John. It was a pretty good shot. You remember that home run?
Oh yeah, yeah. Ken Griffey Sr., who I was lucky to play with at the end of his career there in Atlanta, before he went to Seattle and played with his son, or maybe played in Cincinnati with Junior. Maybe I can't even remember where did he play with his son. Was it Seattle?
Yeah, they were both in Seattle.
I can't remember now.
Yeah,
were they both in any?
Yeah, I think they were both in Seattle. Is that right, Curtis? Were they both? Yeah, he's giving me a thumbs up. He's a big Mariners fan.
Yeah.
Yep, they were both in Seattle.
So anyway, yeah, I certainly remember that home run. It was. Like I say, it's the first time you're on the field with all those guys. I mean, I obviously played against them during the first half of the season, or that was about my third full year. But making an All-Star team, that was my first year in the outfield. That's when the Braves moved me to the outfield, and I made an All-Star team. And it's hard to describe exactly what you're feeling, but it's amazing. And I think there was a little more mystique to the All-Star game back then without interleague play, because it was really the only chance you had to show that you were better than the American League, because you didn't play against them. There was a separation. You only played each other in the All-Star game or the World Series. So as a result of that, it made the game, which I still think is a good game. It's a competitive game because of the nature of the game of baseball. What I mean by that is you cannot not play defense in baseball.
Yeah.
You want to strike guys out. You want to make great plays on defense, whereas the Pro Bowl in football and the NBA All-Star game, defense is really not part of it because it's just too hard to play. You kind of take the time off and don't play defense. But in baseball, you play defense. You have to. You don't want to make a fool of yourself. And you try to catch ground balls. You try to make great plays. And it makes it a better exhibition game, I think, as far as sports are concerned, as far as sports all-star games are concerned. But and then the separation between the leagues, I think it had a little more intrigue to it and just a little bit more on the line.
I can remember the game on like a Tuesday night. You'd be at school all day, and it would be, for a lot of people, it was the first time, you know, you got to see Dave Parker or Rod Carew, because those games were not broadcast in our area, where I got to see all these guys play against each other. And that brings me to what TBS did for the Braves, and what you in particular. What was that like to play when, like, the Braves were America's team?
Well, again, it's hard to put into words what that meant to me personally as far as my career is concerned, and just nowadays in reconnecting with fans like you from those days. It's remarkable to talk to people that, like you said, literally watched us play every day. It was something Ted Turner came up with. We're going to put you on, you know, cable TV, on TBS, and then obviously the Cubs is the other team everybody watched. They were daytime and we were at night, and it established this fan base of Braves fans throughout the country, you know, into Alaska and Hawaii, and it just is a remarkable thing. It was fun then, but now it's even more remarkable as I talk to people and what they, you know, what they did every day. I mean, that's one of the appealing things about baseball, is the long summer saga of a team. You follow them every night. It's not great every night, but over the course of the time, it's like a long miniseries or a long soap opera. And people, I'll tell you what the key to me was our announcers. Ernie Johnson, Pete Van Wieren, Skip Carey. What you saw wherever you were throughout the country was a hometown broadcast.
Yeah.
This was the first time you didn't see Game of the Week, where Joe Garagiola and Tony Kubek came in and, you know, didn't really know us, but did the broadcast. And that was fun. But when you have hometown broadcasters in your home every night, you really feel a connection with the team, and that's what happened.
Dale Murphy with us, former Atlanta Brave, among his stops. That's the one you probably know him from. Was MVP twice and a five-time Gold Glover. Did you realize at the time, did it feel different as you went city to city than maybe other clubs did, that you had that national following? Or, like you point out, is it only something that you realized after that, hey, we had this thing that, you know, the Giants, the A's, the Angels, they didn't have that?
Yeah, we started to notice that. Obviously, you know, as soon as we got on cable and got on every day, but in 82 when we started winning, and we'd go to Houston, and there would be, you know, hundreds of Braves fans at our hotel that have traveled all over Texas to come see us and not the Astros. Or I can remember being in San Francisco, running into someone at our hotel. I'm like, "Where are you from?" They said, "Alaska." We, you know, this is, you know, closest we can come. Obviously, without interleague play, couldn't go to Seattle. So, you start to figure out, you go to a city like St. Louis with serious Cardinal fans, and again, people were coming from all over the Midwest, and we started to feel it. Yeah, it was, I got to say, just like all of us felt, there's something going on here. It's exciting, and it was fun to be a part of, and we appreciate it even more looking back. I mean, when you're playing, you know, you just kind of get, you know, into your thing, and you're just playing the game. But now, as I look back, it was a remarkable time for us. A lot of fun.
We've talked about this before. I've got a Hall of Fame vote. I voted for you in the last 2 years on the ballot for you, were my first 2 years voting, and I was disappointed to see that more people, a guy that was playing at the level. I mean, you were doing what Mike Trout was doing at that time in the 80s. And the end of your career, I think people hold that over you. Were you disappointed with that or at peace with that? Where are you with the Hall of Fame not getting in?
Well, thank you for your vote, by the way. I think I think that's the best way to say it. Is I'm at peace with it. If I think my high was like 23%. If I had 63% and you need, I think, 65%, I think I would probably say something different, because that would only be like a handful more of votes. You know what I mean? If I was knocking on the door like some guys. I think Jack Morris is an example, and there's probably some other guys. I'm just like, that just doesn't seem right. You could get that many, and then the threshold is 75%, which is such a large majority of people. I understand. I've got some very loyal supporters. Maybe something will happen with the new Veterans Committee, which isn't the right terminology, but
yeah.
They realize the guys from the 70s and 80s aren't getting as much consideration. So instead of every 5 years now, I think my name will come up every 3 years. And, you know, we'll see. But I'll tell you, I'm not the only guy. There's guys I think should be in that haven't got very much consideration. So, you know, I understand it. I guess that, like you said, that's the best way to put it, really, is that, you know, I'm at peace with it. I understand. Maybe someday.
I look at Andre Dawson and Jim Rice as comparisons for you, and I go, okay, both of those guys in the same era, you know, home run wise for a decade, you dominate. And I look at that and I say, okay, you are very comparable to two guys that are in. What? Give me the guy or two that you think should be in. Like you say, I'm not alone. Who else should be in?
Well, I think Jack Morris, Lee Smith. I do not understand why Lee Smith is not in. Who was the
I voted for him?
The Saves leader. Saves leader for a number of years. Yeah. I mean, you know, all-time saves leader for a number of years. There's guys. He's got more saves than that I can remember. I think Raleigh Fingers and Bruce Sutter. Maybe he did things differently, and he was a little more. I think a lot of relievers should be in. They're a little hesitant to put the closers in, but
yeah.
I think they've changed the game. I think they should be in. I think. There's some I right off the top of my head, those are the guys I think of. But I love Lou Whitaker and Alan Trammell. And there's I think Jim Cott should be in. I think Ted Simmons should be in. I look at Ted Simmons' numbers as a catcher. I mean, they're remarkable. They've tried to tweak the voting a little bit, and that helps. It's just pretty tough to get traction, but I could probably think of a number of guys that could be in.
All right, we really appreciate your time, and yes, I voted for Morris, Lee Smith, and you. All those names have been on my ballot. So, but there's some guys. I've talked to other voters. There are some guys who just will not vote for a closer. They go, hey, they're only up here this many times. The value to their teams, but we've seen baseball teams that cannot win because they don't have a closer.
Well, there you go.
You know,
that's my question too. I'm like, and the DH as well. We can't hold that. The guy's playing a position in baseball. We can't hold that against him. You know, if there's been some great DHs, they should be in as well. And a closer is part of the game. But I couldn't agree with you more. Even if he was used differently now than then, the term closer is critical to the success of the team. And there's been some great ones. John Franco.
Yeah.
Check out John Franco's numbers. They're incredible.
Dale Murphy, you're the best. I appreciate you, man.
Great to be with you anytime.
There he is, Dale Murphy, who for a decade dominated baseball. Look at Dale Murphy's numbers in the 1980s. Nobody hit more home runs, drove in more runs. Nobody did it better than Dale Murphy for a decade. And he's not in the Hall of Fame. He's going to have to wait for the Veterans Committee to possibly put him in. Edgar Martinez, does he deserve to be in the Hall of Fame? A lot of Seattle fans. Curtis Rogers, does Edgar deserve to be in the Hall of Fame? Yeah, thumbs up, he says. All right, coming up, we will kick that around. Plus, the Rockets and Knicks trying to make Carmelo to Houston a reality. Can the Blazers get involved in that? We'll talk about the third and fourth team possibilities as Adrian Wojnarowski reporting that those teams trying to come to a deal, no deal imminent, but the Knicks and Rockets are confident they're trying to find a third or fourth team in the framework. Is it possible the Blazers could get involved? And if so, would that be some relief for somebody on this roster? Leave it right here.
More with John Canzano.
And Rockets expanding the scope of Carmelo Anthony's escape. It's like he's Shawshank and he's like breaking through the wall of Shawshank. He's got a poster over the top of the hole. He's trying to escape out of New York. We can cry all we want about being in a small market, but being in a big market does not guarantee you success, and the Knicks have proved that. And if you're a Knicks fan, like, you might lament all the bad decisions that have been made, but that is an organization that is spending money. Like, there's nothing worse that, like James Dolan, at least he spends money. The Donald Sterling Clippers era, you know, that was bad ownership. The Miami Marlins and the position they're in, bad ownership. But, you know, if you look at the Knicks, it's bad decisions and bad moves and, you know, James Dolan trying to, at least he looks like he's attempting to win. And in the meantime, the Knicks trying to get Carmelo out of New York, the Rockets trying to get him and make the NBA more interesting for at least people in Houston. But I got my mind on other things. I'm watching this summer and I realize now we're in July. And I start to get a little bit, nervous about things. And maybe if you're like me, see, because what happens to me in this job, in the fact that I cover sports, is we get really busy in the fall. Right around the first week of September, late August, first week of September, man, it gets serious. College football comes. I mean, we get memos that get sent out that say you can't take vacation. Like, September through November. Like, at the Oregonian, they're not going to let their lead sports columnist go on vacation during the football season unless you're having a baby, getting married, or maimed. Like, that's it. KGW, that show goes into primetime. Sports Sunday, the show that I host on that station, goes into primetime. You're not going to miss during the NFL season. So it gets serious for me right around, like, September. When certainly by Labor Day, you're like, you're knee deep in it, and I'm underground. So what happens to me right around July, mid-July, July 12th today, is I start to get nervous that I'm losing my summer. Because I realize all of a sudden that I have like six weeks left, and then it gets serious for me. It's like kids going back to school, and they're sitting around, and they're going, all right, I gotta wring every moment I can get out of this summer. And we have Camp Exceptional coming up next week. It's the summer camp for the kids that the BFT Foundation puts on. And that is you, the listener, who makes that happen. You support the BFT Foundation. Not only if you give money at baldfacetruth.org and you make a donation to the 501c3. You can do that. You can literally go onto the website and you can rent a musical instrument or pay for a summer camp or do whatever you want to do. Whatever you think fits for your... for the desire that you have. But also, you support the BFT Foundation by supporting the great companies that support the BFT Foundation. And you know who those companies are, but you've got the Shoe Mill Stores, Portland to Salem. You've got First Call Heating and Cooling, Anderson Pool Works. But most of all, you've got Oregon Blinds. Derek Eberhardt at Oregon Blinds has been a huge help. So if you are looking for window coverings anywhere, Portland to Eugene, OregonBlinds.net should be a stop for you. And I thank Derek and I thank his team, his brother's fantastic. The whole family's out there. His wife's out there at the golf tournament and the summer camp. And it's just awesome to see that all come together. But I got that camp next week, and then I got to wring everything I can get out of summer. Now, I've never been a big Sun River Bend guy, in part because, like, it's over there, and I'm driving there, and that's a couple days of vacation. You can drive it over there, you're driving back. So I'm thinking to myself, what else do I need to do? We're going to do Sun River and Bend this year. But what else? Like, you're listening to this radio show across the state. You live here. You work here and you play here. Tell me what you're doing this summer that everybody else needs to know about. And this isn't our Monday thing, like, what have you done? And by the way, the Monday thing, the shtick that we did on Monday, what have you done? Call in, basically, for people who didn't hear Monday's show. I said, what have you done that nobody else is going to call has done? And people called in with the most amazing things. Just laughing out loud funny. Was interesting, was compelling. We'll do that every Monday. But tell me what you have to do. What do I need to do in the next 6 weeks that I may or may not know about? Like, I heard somebody say I need to river raft in the Mackenzie River. It's on the list. Somebody said, hey, when you go to Sun River, you got to do this. Eastern Oregon, the Cascades. You tell me, what do I need to do? And by the way, the best moment of that whole thing with what would you do was the guy who called in and said he could imitate Ethel Merman.
I imitate Ethel Merman.
Okay, I want to hear it.
Okay. I don't know how good it's going to come across on these speakers here, but anyway, here we go.
There's no business like show business. There's no business I know. Everything about it is appealing. Everything the traffic will allow. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra bow.
Phenomenal. Like, I have found myself in the shower trying to imitate that, trying to capture that moment, and not as well as him.
I don't know how good it's going to come across on these speakers here, but anyway, here we go.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.